There's a tradition in the world of insight meditation retreats of beginning the retreat by taking refuge in the triple gem of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and renewing our commitment to the five precepts. So I'd like to invite you to do that as we're entering into our retreat and as we're bringing this gathering night to a close. And I'd like to just say a few things about the taking refuge and about undertaking the five precepts. And beginning with going for refuge. Just stopping to think, where do we turn for safety and for security? And just, you know, in your own life, your own mind and heart, what are the things that bring you a sense of security or safety? It might be, you know, the balance in the bank, the 401k. In this economy, it's not real safe and secure. or it might be that being someone. So being someone at work or being someone at home in terms of role, that we find a sense of safety and security there. Or perhaps in status or power, accumulation of wealth. And there is a certain limited security in having enough food, clothing, shelter, being recognized in the community and esteemed. But it's not the ultimate refuge. It won't bring us ultimate safety. So I'd like to read from the Dhammapada, which is a collection of short, wonderful little sayings of the Buddha. And this is called A Refuge Supreme. They go to many a refuge, to mountains and forests, to park and tree shrines, people threatened with danger. That's not the secure refuge, not the supreme refuge. That's not the refuge having gone to which you gain release from all suffering and stress. But when, having gone to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha for refuge, you see with right discernment the four noble truths: stress, the cause of stress, the transcending of stress, and the noble eightfold path, the way to the stilling of stress. That's the secure refuge. That's the supreme refuge. That is the refuge having gone to which you gain release from all suffering and stress. So finding a place of safety and security, a place that is stress-free. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are places to go for that. So just reflecting for ourselves, you know, what does it mean to go to the Buddha as a refuge? And it can be understood in the sense that, excuse me, that we find a sense of confidence in knowing that 2,500, 2,600 years ago, there was a human being just like us who was able to find a way out of suffering, who was able to find an unconditional happiness, which is what we're probably all looking for, something we can count on. Or we might look at this in terms not of the historical Buddha, but taking refuge in our ability to awaken, that we all have Buddha nature, that we have an inherent capacity to awaken to absolute truth and find unconditioned happiness, find that true security. that this capacity for awakening, or this nature, this awakened nature, is not something that we're having to create, but rather it's something that we're on a journey of discovering. So it's more a matter of that it's there. We're just looking to uncover that treasure. We can go to the Dharma for refuge. And Dharma can be understood as the teachings of the Buddha. And there's volumes and volumes and volumes of what the Buddha had to say about suffering and the end of suffering. That there's a certain sense of, oh, at least there's somewhere I know where to go to look. There are practices, and someone has laid them out in great detail, and teachers have been teaching them, and it's something I can go to and access and apply to my own life. So the teachings of the Buddha as Dharma. The other place to take refuge is to see Dharma simply as the truth with a big T. So it doesn't matter whether the Buddha said it or not. To come to look for what is actually true and let ourselves find refuge in the truth of things. Another way of understanding Dharma is to understand it as what is. And so often, doesn't our suffering, our stress, our lack of security come because we're at war or struggling with what is? And when we can simply settle in, acknowledge, you know what, this is what is. And I can be okay with whatever is. That's a place of absolute security. Because it really doesn't matter what's happening. We have a refuge. We have a grounding. And then finally, going to the Sangha for our refuge. At one level, Sangha is understood as the community of monastics, or the community of those who have attained enlightenment, the noble ones. And, taking refuge, or going to those who are on the path. Taking encouragement that there are human beings just like us who have come to the end of suffering and realized liberation. At a very day-to-day level, we can take refuge in the fact that there are hundreds and thousands of human beings right now who are finding the teachings of the Buddha as a way out of suffering. And so we have many connections, many like-minded people. In your own, wherever you happen to live, hopefully you're blessed with a Sangha, some kind of sitting group or group of spiritual friends, companions, like-minded individuals, and just reflecting on how wonderful it is to be able to talk about this with someone else and they understand what we're saying. You know, in your workplace, would people understand? right speech, wisdom, letting go, non-attachment. It's not really the way of the world. And right here, in this moment, on this retreat, we can find a refuge with each other. We've come together and we're forming that Sangha, that Kalyanamitta, spiritual friends. And when you walked in, did you have kind of a sense of, I'm here? A sense of, oh, it's good to be here. It's good to leave everything out there and just settle in here. If you had that sense of, a little bit of coming home, it might be because you have come to a place to continue to uncover and connect with your awakened nature. You've come to a time and a place and an activity in which you're opening more deeply to the Dharma. And you're doing it within the context of, or within the companionship of spiritual friends. You know, we all could stay at home and do a little self-retreat. You know, listen to a tape or CD, sit and walk, and that's one way to do it. But I've done retreats like that, and there's just something so comforting and restful and in being held by one another, by those who are leading a retreat, that it becomes a place of refuge. So taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And we're talking about bringing compassion to wisdom. And when I think about going, finding my safety, my security in something that will actually give me safety and security, I really see that as a very wise undertaking. And I also see it as a very compassionate undertaking. Wise because Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha can give me that security that I'm looking for. And compassion because going to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is a way to release myself from suffering, which is a very compassionate work. So, if you'd like, you could join me in formally taking refuge. And I've given you little half sheets here. Some of you have been on retreats where we've chanted going to the three refuges. Feel free to jump in at any time you want to, or just listen. And beginning at the top of the page, that's just it says homage to the blessed, noble, and perfectly enlightened one. And I kind of like to see it as giving the Buddha a big hug and saying, thank you so much. So, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Duṭiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Duṭiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Duṭiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. So we go to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha for our refuge, for our true security and happiness. And one way of creating safety for ourselves and for others is when we are living an ethical life, a life of non-harming. And the Buddha understood the impact of our conduct on this path that leads to awakening. The impact of our conduct, the way we speak and act in the world, very much influencing the ability of the mind to calm and to focus so that it can see truth, can see the truth of what's causing suffering and what brings suffering to an end. So if we just stop and think for ourselves, you know, when our conduct is what we might say is unethical, or our conduct either in word or speech is harming either ourselves or others, it's probably coming out of, take the word probably out of there, it's coming out of the roots of suffering. So if we're engaging in any kind of conduct in speech or action that is harming, it's because we're caught in the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion. If you just think of any time you've acted in an unskillful way, in a way that harms, or in what you would say is unethical or immoral behavior, look to what was the intention, what was the root of it, and it will probably be some form of greed, hatred, and delusion. When we're acting in an ethical manner, when our words and actions are non-harming, if we look to the underlying intention for those words and actions, we will probably see it's coming out of non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion. And there's all flavors of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. Generosity, loving kindness, compassion, restraint. Just we could go on and on with the list of that. And have you noticed, John was talking about that earlier, have you noticed that when your speech and conduct is non-harming, so that your mind isn't caught up, perhaps in terms of speech, you know, if you're staying truthful, your mind isn't caught up with having to think about, you know, well, you know, what lie did I say and who did I say it to and how do I keep my story straight, but I said something to someone else. And so we can really look at our own experience and see how when we're caught in words and actions that are coming out of greed, hatred, and delusion, that the mind is in confusion. It's stirred up. Tomorrow morning, we're going to start off just kind of remembering the hindrances that stirs the mind up in so many different ways. And it's very difficult for a mind that's caught up in that to be still and focused and open and seeing clearly. So, bringing our conduct in alignment with non-suffering is very important. It's a support. The one way the Buddha talks about this ethical conduct is in the five precepts. And he describes a code of ethical conduct that supports a calm mind. And a calm mind is one that can gain wisdom. So the five precepts, just to review them, to refrain from killing, to refrain from stealing, to refrain from sexual misconduct, to refrain from lying, to refrain from taking intoxicants that cause heedlessness. And Thich Nhat Hanh has called these five precepts five mindfulness trainings. And that makes a lot of sense, that if we're focusing on refraining from these unskillful behaviors, that our mindfulness It leads toward a mind that can be truly mindful. And so the way to keep or practice these mindfulness trainings, we can do this in a number of ways. One would be to reflect and contemplate on their deeper meaning. So at the surface, to refrain from killing, you know, that we will not take another human being's life. And we can reflect at a deeper level on, you know, what are many forms of killing that don't involve taking a human being's life? So it might be any kind of act of violence. It might be, a harsh word. It might be killing someone's spirit by putting them down. It might be limiting the amount of harm we do to the environment. So looking, reflecting on the deeper meaning and letting that precept be lived at wider and wider circles. The other way to practice with the precepts is with mindfulness and just to keep, to stay aware. And it's kind of like putting a little guard in the Christian scripture or the Hebrew scriptures, put a guard at the door to my lips, O Lord. But just being aware of whatever act or word is coming up and knowing whether it's toward harm or towards non-harm. And then cultivating qualities of mind and heart that are any flavor of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. So, in a sense, as we look more deeply into the precepts, we go beyond avoiding killing to cultivating reverence for life. We go beyond stealing or avoiding stealing to cultivating generosity and respect for what belongs to others. We go beyond simply avoiding sexual misconduct and cultivate respect and love in intimate relationships. We go beyond avoiding lying and cultivate speech that is not only truthful, but is timely, is helpful, and is loving. We go beyond simply avoiding taking intoxicants that cause heedlessness and pay attention to what we ingest, not just through our mouths, but through our eyes, our ears, absorb in our bodies, and as best we can put into us only that which nurtures and nourishes. So I would like to, I'm going to give you the five mindfulness train. They'll be out here if you'd like to take a copy. But what I'd like to do is just read these reflectively. So whatever helps you to drink it in, looking at me or not looking at me. And Thich Nhat Hanh really takes this to a radical level. Just notice if as you hear Thich Nhat Hanh inviting us to make a commitment to the precepts at very deep levels, if any resistance or discomfort arises. It might. That has been my experience with these mindfulness trainings. And this is not a bad thing. If you can just let the resistance or the discomfort be there and realize that, first of all, it is impossible to live these precepts completely in this human realm. So right away, that the full expression of these precepts is kind of like this golden light out there toward which we are trying to move. So being very wise in realizing that we probably won't be able to live these as deeply as we would want to, and bringing a lot of compassion to the one who may still be caught at some level in unskillful behaviors. So bring compassion to the wisdom. First mindfulness training. aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life. I am committed to cultivating compassion and learning ways to protect the lives of people, animals, plants, and minerals. I am determined not to kill, not to let others kill, and not to support any act of killing in the world, in my thinking, and in my way of life. Second mindfulness training. Aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing, and oppression, I am committed to cultivating loving kindness and learning ways to work for the well-being of people, animals, plants, and minerals. I will practice generosity by sharing my time, energy, and material resources with those who are in real need. I am determined not to steal or to possess anything that should belong to others. I will respect the property of others and prevent others from profiting from human suffering or the suffering of other species on earth. Third mindfulness training. Aware of the suffering caused by sexual misconduct, I am committed to cultivating responsibility and learning ways to protect the safety and integrity of individuals, couples, families, and society. I am determined not to engage in sexual relations without love and a long-term commitment. To preserve the happiness of myself and others, I am determined to respect my commitments and the commitments of others. I will do everything in my power to protect children from sexual abuse and to prevent couples and families from being broken by sexual misconduct. Fourth mindfulness training. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech and the inability to listen to others, I am committed to cultivating loving speech and deep listening in order to bring joy and happiness to others and relieve others of their suffering. Knowing that words can create happiness or suffering, I am determined to speak truthfully with words that inspire self-confidence, joy, and hope. I will not spread news that I do not know to be certain, and will not criticize or condemn things of which I am not sure. I will refrain from uttering words that can cause division or discord, or that can cause the family or the community to break. I am determined to make all efforts to reconcile and resolve all conflicts, however small. Fifth mindfulness training. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful consumption, I am committed to cultivating good health, both physical and mental, for myself, my family, and my society by practicing mindful eating, drinking, and consuming. I will ingest only items that preserve peace, well-being, and joy in my body, in my consciousness, and in the collective body and consciousness of my family and society. I am determined to refrain from using alcohol or any other intoxicant or to ingest foods or other items that contain toxins, such as certain TV programs, magazines, books, films, and conversations. I will work to transform violence, fear, anger, and confusion in myself and in society by practicing a diet for myself and for society. I understand that a proper diet is crucial for self-transformation and for the transformation of society. So if you wish, I invite you to form the intention in your heart to practice these five mindfulness trainings to the best of your ability. And if you wish to undertake these trainings or reaffirm your commitment to these trainings, please respond silently, "I will," to each question. Will you undertake the first mindfulness training to avoid killing and cultivate reverence for life? Will you undertake the second mindfulness training to avoid stealing and cultivate generosity and respect for what belongs to others? Will you undertake the third mindfulness training to avoid sexual misconduct and cultivate respect and love in relationships? Will you undertake the fourth mindfulness training to avoid lying and cultivate speech that is truthful and loving? Will you undertake the fifth mindfulness training to avoid taking intoxicants that cause heedlessness and ingest only that which nourishes body and mind? The five mindfulness trainings have the capacity to protect life and make it beautiful. These trainings encourage us in the direction of peace, joy, liberation, and awakening. They are the foundation for individual happiness and the happiness of the family and society. If we practice according to the five mindfulness trainings, we're already on the path of right practice. The trainings protect us and help us avoid making mistakes and creating suffering, fear, and despair. Practicing these trainings, we're able to build peace and happiness in ourselves and our family, and joy and peace in our society. May the merit of our commitment to the five mindfulness trainings benefit all beings and bring us all to liberation from suffering.